Lucis Trust, a non-profit, non-political, and non-sectarian organization on the roster of the Economic and Social Council of the United Nations and concerned with the establishment of world cooperation and goodwill, presents Inner Sight with your host, Robert Anderson. He, with Sarah and Dale McKechnie, President and Vice President of Lucis Trust, will discuss philosophical and spiritual topics essential to everyday life. Now here's your host, Robert Anderson.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Inner Sight. Inner Sight is simply seeing that which is always present, but not yet fully recognized. You have, within you, the ability to see yourself and the world around you in a new way with new eyes. So, stay with us and together we'll look at the world and ourselves with inner sight. Our topic for today is life and death. And before we get started, I'd like to tell you about a little surprise we have for you. We have a tape cassette called Near Death. The title of it is Near Death Experiences. It's a 60-minute tape. I found it fascinating, and I've listened to it three times so far. But we'll tell you in a little while later on in the show. I'll explain it in greater detail as to how you can acquire that tape cassette. All the work of Lucis Trust, it all emanates from the literature of Alice Bailey, and she's our founder. She's the founder of Lucis Trust, and she wrote 24 volumes of literature. I guess they can best be described as spiritual philosophy literature. And all of the dialogue that you'll hear from this show has been really influenced by the works of Alice Bailey. As is this thought, by the way. Our ideas about death have been erroneous. We have looked upon it as the great and ultimate terror, whereas in reality, it is the great escape, the entrance into a fuller measure of activity, and the release of the life from the crystallized vehicle and an inadequate form. Can you imagine if we could lose our fear of death? Well, that's, I guess, one of the reasons why we're doing this show, and perhaps at the end of the show you'll agree with Edgar Allan Poe, who said that death is only the birth of our immortality. I hope he's right. Could you explain what Alice Bailey meant by the crystallized vehicle and an inadequate form? I don't know. I hope you do.
I'm not sure I do either. Crystallization is a reference to the stiffening or hardening and the atrophying of the body. Those of us who suffer from a touch of arthritis know very well what crystallization is. We get stiffer and our joints creak and they're less fluid and responsive to the brain signal for movement. That's an example of crystallization. But it happens on all levels of the physical form. The fluidity with which the young body can transmit energy of all sorts, vitality, becomes gradually less and less because the body, the shell through which the spirit expresses itself, becomes more hardened and less responsive and malleable. It's something that happens to all levels of life that live in a physical form, not just the human. It happens in the natural world, and it's cyclic, it's periodic. We are entering into the fall now in the northern hemisphere, and the leaves will start to turn red and green and gold and brown, and it's very beautiful. But that's an example of crystallization, because the leaves no longer conduct the chlorophyll process as they did in spring and summer. They are becoming less and less vital in their capacity to carry out chlorophyll, and so they become dry and eventually will fall off the tree. There's great beauty to it. It's part of the cycle. Those leaves will fall into the ground, decay, and feed the earth, and next spring new life will return. This happens in the animal kingdom and the human kingdom too. So it's part of the cycle of life in form. And yet when you think about the words, the crystallized vehicle and the inadequate form, it sounds like you've failed. And it isn't a failure to get old and for the body to wear out. We wear out our clothes. We wear out our cars. We wear out our shoes. And we don't say that those garments failed. They just were used up and had their lifespan and are done. The same thing is true on a more significant level, obviously, but it still applies to the physical body. That's our garment, too. It's the garment of the soul. We wear it out through use, and death is the discarding of it, but it's just the garment, the outer shell.
Yeah, that's right. But crystallization doesn't mean only the physical form, as you mentioned. It also applies to the mind, because many of our ideas become crystallized and fixed, and our attitudes become hardened and fixed, and we never are not able to change after a certain age. It seems like we're kind of fixed in our patterns and in the way we think. And so that's a certain kind of crystallization that sets in. But as you implied, this can be a good thing, a good stage that every form has to go through. Sometimes crystallization reaches a point where it's on the verge of breaking up. And that's why crystallization happens, because these forms do have to break up. It's part of the process. The old forms are inadequate, as it says in that question and in the quote, an inadequate form. Mm-hmm. It's inadequate to contain and express something new and fresh and creative.
It was probably adequate at the time of its birth.
It too has gone through that cycle when it was, fresh and creative in one's thinking, in the early days. But eventually that has to all break up.
I wish we could think of life in form the way we do a young child's growth. A child grows and he outgrows his shoes and his clothes, and that's considered a sign of progress. Well, in a way, we outgrow our outer garments, our body, our physical body, our emotional nature, our mental nature. We outgrow them, meaning we, the soul, the inner person, expands and grows to the point where those bodies that we brought with us when we were born no longer serve. And what takes over that you mentioned is the what's called in the Ageless Wisdom the destroyer aspect. And it's actually a beneficent process. We think probably of destruction as something bad, but only if you're so tied into the preservation of some form at any and all costs could destruction seem to be bad. When it comes at the right moment, it's a release, a freeing of something that might be captive.
Yeah, and that's the point that I was thinking the same thing, great minds along the same path here, but we're too focused on the form, and if we can focus less on the form and what is being released by the breaking up of that form, as you said, we tend to see the breaking up of a form as something destructive and horrible and something like that. But if we could learn to look at what's being released, what is being liberated, whether it be a human form or a species or a plant or an animal or a planet or a solar system for that matter, we see these great explosions out in space and we think something horrible is happening. But really think about what is being released and liberated at that point, and then you'll have a different perspective.
When you say we focus too much on our form, are you saying, Dale, that we identify with our form to the extent that we feel that we are our form? Is that what you're saying?
Well, yes, in the early stages there is too close an identity, and that's why we hold on to the form, so because there is that close identity, right?
Mm-hmm. In the opening thought, I quoted Alice Bailey as saying that mankind's ideas about death are erroneous. What is erroneous about our current ideas on death?
Well, there are a number of things that are miss-skewed, you could say, in our approach to death. One might be that we think that the death of the body is the end of life, mm-hmm. and it's not. If we think of it as the release of the life within the body, then we can see it as a process of liberation rather than an end. The only thing that comes to an end is the garment, the shell, which is the physical body. And this was really made vivid to me recently when Dale and I were walking in a forest in the northwest coastal area of North America. And when you walk in a forest out there, you see all kinds of life and death all mixed in together. These huge trees, what were they, redwoods and what?
They were red cedar. Spruce and pine and...
Well, it was the red cedar trees, which are huge, that most caught my attention because they had fallen down in the forest, as is natural, and they were disintegrating into dust, just like the Bible said, ashes to ashes and dust to dust. They were disintegrating. But out of this pile of red cedar dust and the carcass of the old tree, new life was already growing. And some of the trees that were growing literally out of the decaying corpse of the old cedar were already huge. And it was a sign of, to me, of how we don't understand the process of death as making possible further life. It's actually not only beneficent, it's necessary. Those trees have to die to make new life possible because the new life builds upon and feeds off of the old life.
Also, I think there's some erroneous ideas about burial and cremation. We have such an identification with the form and with that person that and with that person as being the physical body, and yet there is the hope that the person has for example, gone to heaven. And yet our ideas about heaven and hell are erroneous and at best and confusing. And I think that's all part of the erroneous illusions that we carry around with us.
Well, again, it's focusing on the body and the preservation mm-hmm. of the body, embalming it or whatever process one undergoes, to as if the spirit still resides in that body. And of course, here we're on a delicate area because there are religious traditions that do believe the spirit remains connected to the body, and that's a matter of deep belief, and I don't want to offend them, but it is... in a certain extent, a mistaken idea that the body, the physical nature, is the whole sum total of being, when in fact it's a vehicle, similar to a car. Mm-hmm. The Bhagavad Gita of ancient Hinduism talks of the physical form as a chariot. And in those days they didn't have cars, they had chariots mm-hmm. and horses, and the chariot is the body. But it's not the true being. So it depends on where we put our focus. If we think that our whole sum total of ourselves is tied up in our body, then the death of that body is a terrible thing. If we think that our sum total of our being is in our consciousness doesn't need a physical body. It can work through one, but with limitation, actually. From what I've read, it sounds as if the consciousness is actually... freer and more expansive when it doesn't have to work through a brain and a body.
Yeah, the brain is a great limitation on the sensitivity and the range of the consciousness. Yeah.
So could you also compare the body to an article of clothing, such
yes.
as a coat? So
yes.
when we think of death, really, it's no more than changing coats.
Yes.
or mm-hmm. leaving a car or losing right. a car, which we all
right.
go through. And
right.
that would probably be a much more logical perception of it, right?
Yes. I don't want to minimize the process of grief, mm-hmm. because having lived through that, we all know that that is a tremendous and terrible event. But that's really something that pertains to the living.
Mm-hmm.
What we're talking about is the passing on of a particular individual. For that person, it's liberation.
Mm-hmm. For those people who just tuned in, you're listening to Inner Sight, and our topic for today is life and death. And earlier I spoke about a very interesting tape cassette that was done quite a while ago, but it certainly pertains to this particular topic that we're discussing today. And the title of it is Near-Death Experiences, and I found it fascinating. It's a 60-minute tape. Several people are interviewed during that tape, and it was really enlightening. And, of course, today we have so much modern technology. Doctors are able to do so much as far as sustaining life that people are having some very unusual experiences in this day and age. And we'd be more than happy to send it out to you, a copy of this. For this, though, there will have to be a donation that you send, and we'd love to just send it out to you, but there are shipping and handling costs and production costs. So if you send us a donation, we'll send it out. Just when you call up, ask for the tape on near-death experiences.
No, they have to send a donation
first. Well,
first
they send it in, okay. Well, and in that case, then we'll have to give you the address if you... send a donation to Lucis Trust. Address it to Lucis Trust, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. That's Lucis Trust, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. And if you send in a donation, we'll send that cassette to you. Then once again, the title of the cassette is Near Death Experiences. And if you come away from that tape and listen to it for 60 minutes and don't go through some sort of a shift in consciousness, I'd be very surprised, because as I said, I listened to it three times so far. And also, if you're interested in what Lucis Trust is all about, just give us a call. I guess probably the most frequently asked question that we receive is Lucis Trust a religion? No, we're not. We're a spiritual philosophy organization, and people who come to our meetings, they come from all walks of life, multiple numbers of religious backgrounds, and I guess, well, what do we have in common? We're all interested in the improvement of mankind. So if you'd like us to send you a general package of information, and there is a lot of information in that package, we'll be happy to send it out to you. You would have to just give us a call on our toll-free number, 1-866-695-8247. Once again, it's 1-866-695-8247. And the easy way to remember it is 1-866-NY-LUCIS. Think of New York, Lucis. Lucis is spelled L-U-C-I-S. Once again, 1-866-NY-LUCIS. Think of New York, Lucis. And once again, for those people who would like to send a donation into Lucis Trust, and you send your donations to Lucis Trust, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. That's if you'd like the 60-minute tape, title of which is Near-Death Experiences. And please do remember, all the work of the Lucis Trust, including this radio program, is funded by the voluntary donations of people like yourselves who support the goals of the Lucis Trust. We're not endowed, nor do we have a wealthy benefactor who helps to pay for this program. We depend on the donations, large and small, of individuals. So please give if you want these programs to continue on the air. Are life and death really opposites, as so many people think?
I don't think so. I think death and life are equal. There's an ancient scripture that says, life is one and naught can take or touch that life. Life is one and naught can take or touch that life. Regardless of whether we're speaking of life in the body or out of the body. I think what our opposites are, life and form. Mm-hmm. Although even those are not eternal opposites, the whole trend of our evolutionary process is to merge life and form into one whole. And that will happen as spirit, pure life, can maintain its awareness while expressing through the physical plane. It's a matter of merging the consciousness of pure spirit and physical matter. When that happens, then there will be no opposites even on the level of life and form. But for now, at our present level of consciousness, they are. It's the fact that we are so tied into our individuality and to our separateness that I think makes us think that the death of our personality and our body are the end of us. And that's where the whole dilemma is centered. Mm-hmm. That's what the Buddha tried to teach, that we are not forever separated entities, but actually fragments of a whole.
Right, and I don't know that you could say that life and death are actually opposites. I see it, and maybe I'm completely wrong here, but I see death as part of the process of life. It's one of the processes that makes life go on, because death is not really the end of life. Life continues to exist. And life does not arise out of our physical body and brain. It does not begin at conception and end at birth. Life is that vital essence that animates all forms, and a human form or an animal or a vegetable or even a planet for that matter. And all these forms are animated by the one life of God. And it's the death is just the process that disintegrates the form, but the living being within the form continues on. At least that's my way of viewing it.
I think too often we think of death as something that's almost an accident, that is kind of a personal offense or a failure, rather than something that's not only normal but actually the soul's choice. Mm-hmm. And if we could view death as an interlude, not a finality, and as a matter of the soul's choice at the right time, I think it would really transform this sense of disaster that surrounds the whole issue of death. Someone dies and our response immediately is, oh, that's too bad. Mm. Well, it might be if it's a premature death. Yes, it is a tragedy. But for many people, it comes at the right moment for the soul. The soul has completed its intended purpose for that particular cycle, and it's the right time. I think people do sense this because they will say it was his time, and I think that's an indication that on an intuitive level we do understand that death is governed by law. But another thing that we need to remember is that everything that lives on Earth must die. Everything, absolutely everything, will die. Alice Bailey said that this interplay of the principle of death with the principle of life produces the basic activity of creation. It's all part of the creative process, life and death. All is governed by the mind of God, she said. And she said, it is literally true, nevertheless, that not a sparrow falleth without its fall being noticed by those who watch and guide our planet's life. I think that's something you either believe or don't believe. Mm-hmm. I believe it, and I find great comfort in it.
Is there any way we can prepare for death while still living a fully and joyfully, while still living a very positive? We tend to go into denial about death, and we never really prepare for it, but how can we prepare for it?
Well, one way that occurs to me is by developing a practice of meditation, because in that you are developing the subjective aspect of life. You're learning to focus your consciousness on a more abstract inner level rather than being focused on the outer plane of activity all the time. Meditation abstracts the mind, and that's preparation for the final abstraction, mm-hmm. when the soul withdraws from the body.
Also, you mentioned about abstraction. when we abstract from the body. It's written very clearly in the Bailey books that we do this every night when we go to sleep.
Eek. but we come back.
But we come back, and it's what departs from the body is the consciousness part of us, and the life part of us still is retained by the contained on the body, and is still attached to the body. But the consciousness leaves, and then when we wake up, it returns. And there are ways that you can. If you're aware of this when you go to sleep at night, then that's one way to begin to think about and prepare, perhaps, from the great transition when it does come.
Yes, to develop that alert consciousness as you slip into sleep is something that takes a lot of effort, but that's a major way of preparing for the final severing of the cord that links the soul to the body. I came across an interesting statement in a book called The Tibetan Book of the Dead that touched on what you're saying about sleep. It said that the content of the nightly dream state is quite a large extent the product of the daytime waking state. So what we dream about at night is pretty much a picture of what was going on in our minds when we were awake, and that the reverse is also true, that the product of our waking state, of our consciousness as we go through our daily life, is a reflection of where our consciousness was in our dream state. They're more merged and reflecting of each other than we realize.
Oh, very interesting.
It should give us pause in how we preoccupy ourselves during the day.
And I think it's also a good practice is just trying to live a good life of goodwill and love, because these are the great energies that pull us through on the other side when we do make that transition.
Yeah, the old saw that you can't take it with you isn't true. You do take it with you in the sense of what you have just said, the quality of your life you definitely take with you. So.
And that affects what you encounter on the other side of the veil, too, which we can go into some other time. But these are all interesting things to keep in mind.
Mm-hmm. And just a reminder, if you'd like that tape cassette, it's a 60-minute tape cassette. It's the title of it is Near-Death Experiences. And there are production costs for it, and there are shipping and handling costs, so we do require a donation on that tape, and if you do send us a donation, we'll be happy to send out that 60-minute tape cassette, the title of which is Near-Death Experiences. I think you'll find it fascinating. I've listened to it 3 times. And if you want that tape, just send donations to Lucis Trust, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. And also, if you want the general package of information that's full of information about Lucis Trust, who we are, give us a call on our toll-free number, 1-866-695-8247. The easy way, 1-866-NY-LUCIS. Think of New York Lucis. That's about all the time we have for our discussion today. You've been listening to Inner Sight. Now we would like to close with a world prayer called The Great Invocation. It's a call for light and love and goodwill to flow into the world and into our hearts. Let's listen for a moment to these powerful words.
From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into human minds. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into human hearts. May the coming one return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide all little human wills, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the human race, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth.